Welcome to the Lions Pride Show, a twice-a-week podcast dedicated to all things Detroit Lions by the fans for the fans. I'm Aaron Sanders, joined by my brother Josh, and this is the Week 11 preview, talking about the upcoming matchup between the Detroit Lions and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Today we're going to cover Lions news and injuries. We'll touch a little bit on NFC North standings in the playoff picture. We're going to give you our take on the Pittsburgh Steelers and how we match up, take a look at the offensive and defensive outlooks, give you some Lions keys to victory, and we'll wrap up with a contender pick'em. Now remember, you can find us on iTunes by searching Lions Pride Podcast or direct at lionsprideshow.podomatic.com. You can also email the show at lionsprideshow@gmail.com. So send us your thoughts, you know, give us your comments, let us know what you think of how we're doing. We'd love to include your content on the show. So with that, Josh, let's get into it. What's the news? What's going on?
Well, obviously we all know it's a huge matchup this week in Pittsburgh. Coming off a huge win against Chicago, we've taken control of the North at 6-3. We control our own destiny. It's somewhere Lions fans are not used to seeing the team. Actually, coming into this game, Lions are 6-3. Pittsburgh's 3-6. Typically, you'd see that as roles reversed. But there is some history behind it. The Lions have not won in Pittsburgh since 1955. But the Lions have made a habit this year of breaking some of these long streaks. We've already got a win on the road at Washington. That was a 22-year drought.
That was incredible.
We won at Chicago, obviously, and that was a 6-year drought since we won there. So it's time to change the history in Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. I mean, we all know how important that win last week in Chicago was. Looking forward to doing the same thing at Pittsburgh this week. One piece of news that I'm sure that most Lions fans found really interesting was Brandon Marshall throwing up some smack talk, saying, calling the Detroit Lions little brother after the beatdown. Well, not a beatdown, but after the defeat that the Bears suffered at the Lions' hands.
You see, sports teams and figures in general should just figure out that calling someone little brother is not an effective way to motivate. In fact, it charges up the other team quite a bit. I mean, we've seen this here at home in the Michigan State rival plenty of times, but you'd think Brandon Marshall would have learned from Dez Bryant in the Dallas game that week leading up to that matchup. Dez Bryant saying, you know, he's every bit the player that Calvin Johnson is. And of course, you know, Calvin Johnson's Calvin Johnson. He does his thing. The Lions take that game. And we did the same thing to Brandon Marshall and the Bears. I mean, you got to figure this out eventually. Just don't talk smack. They've effectively been done twice now. It's a season sweep by the Detroit Lions. And we've taken control of the division. They're looking up at us, so thanks a lot, Brandon Marshall.
Appreciate it. Well, one thing that we can talk about Lions news is the fact that we haven't been in the news, at least not for negative reasons. I think you can attribute that to Jim Schwartz.
With Jim Schwartz, typically, you know, he's a fiery guy, he's got a lot of attitude, he's very Harbaugh-like in that. I mean, he's a player coach, and his teams are typically, there's some questions there about their maturity, how disciplined they are. But even in the wake of all this Brandon Marshall talk, they went out and they won a football game. And then after that, they moved on immediately. They went back to work, went back to practice, and focused on the next opponent. And that's a huge step in maturity for the Detroit Lions. You don't see that typically. They're going to run their gums back. They're going to hop on the phone and tweet something stupid. They're going to go out and drink, get a DUI, get arrested, whatever the case may be. And they're not doing that. Reggie Bush didn't have a whole lot of comments for it. Jim Schwartz didn't have comments for it. You know, Calvin never does. Matthew Stafford just said, we're focused on the next opponent. That's a huge thing not to be overlooked, because that means that the team is focused on what they need to do and not bumping their gums about it.
Absolutely. You're seeing, like you said, you're seeing a lot of maturity out of this team, and you're, you know, they're essentially taking, you know, they're already moving on from that huge win and saying, listen, you know, this is a one-game season. We're already looking at the next opponent, and we're just looking to be 1-0 in the next game.
Exactly.
That's huge.
There's a ton of work left to be done. They haven't won anything yet. And that's the thing. We need to stop getting caught up as Lions fans. I mean, we can sit here and project the schedule all we want. You know, jokers like us can talk about NFC North championships and deep runs, the playoffs, and Super Bowls. They haven't won crap yet. They're 6-3, and they're in prime position. but they still need to go out and execute and finish.
Absolutely, I agree. Well, there's not a whole lot else going on in the news other than the fact that, well, actually, I should say this, though, too. We've seen a lot more national coverage.
Absolutely. Peter King had a write-up in Monday Morning Quarterback, and he never talks Lions. But he's talking Carolina Panthers, Detroit Lions, of all things, in Monday Morning Quarterback. He was on Brandon Pettigrew, actually, appeared on Jim Rome's show today. So getting some jungle karma from Romy over there. I mean, you don't see Lions getting this type of coverage, this type of exposure, and this is all on the heels of a huge win, and all the bloggers, a lot of the national media outlets are all talking about whether the Lions can actually finish this thing off, and a lot of them are picking them as a dark horse in the NFC because they've had such a favorable schedule, which we alluded to last week. But it's still, I hate that kind of stuff. I hope that that Schwartz keeps that locker room compartmentalized, keeps them focused on the task at hand. It sure seems like that's what's going on right now.
And that's good to see.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, leave the speculation to the fans.
Exactly. That's our job.
Exactly. I mean, and, well, like we said, one of the reasons we started this podcast is because there's been a severe lack of Lions coverage in national news coverage. In media. You just don't see it. I mean, us local guys, local to Michigan at least, we have a radio shows that allude to it for 10 to 15 minutes at a time, but outside of that, you're just not getting the deep coverage, the statistical analysis, really talking about the lineups, talking about the matchups, talking about the recaps that are going on, and so it's a nice change to see them on TV, in-depth analysis, you know, people that you're reading about, you know, the guys that you follow to read about at least, actually talking Lions. It's been pretty cool to see.
I completely agree. It's a breath of fresh air. I just hope that the culture is that in the locker room right now and just across the organization as a whole, that they don't buckle under that because this is not a position that they're used to being in. So they've learned a little bit at a time how to win. Now they need to learn how to sustain winning.
Yeah, well, we hear Jim Schwartz and we hear the Lions, they get up on that podium and they talk about winning culture. And they talk about establishing that there because it wasn't there before.
Right.
And I'm tired of hearing it because now you're winning. And you understand what it's like to win. So now they need to get past we need to establish a winning culture, too. We need to sustain a winning culture.
Act like a winner. Act like you've been there before. You know, we talk about this all the time when Barry Sanders was playing and he got into the end zone. That's what his old man would tell him. Act like you've been there before. All right? Hand the ball off to the ref. Get your butt back to the sideline. Well, it's no different. That same philosophy applies now with the Detroit Lions. They're 6-3, they're a first-place team, they control their own destiny going to the playoffs, so hand the ball to the ref and shut up. Get the job done. Execute every week. You are a better team, you're more talented, your roster is better, the coaching staff is doing their jobs. You know, this team has been put together enough that they can win in the National Football League.
We do have more talent, especially on both sides of the ball, than a lot of the opponents that we're facing. No reason not to win, except for when it comes down to execution. And like you said, this coaching team, this coaching staff is doing what it needs to do to prepare these guys each week to go out and execute. And it falls squarely on their shoulders to do that.
Well, that old adage, the paper Lions, doesn't just apply, I mean, across anything, any scope of whatever, but the Lions themselves, it's applied to them countless times where they've had the team on paper, they've had the matchups necessary. Now it's just time to get it done.
Well, let's move into injuries. I want to talk about that. We do have some significant ones. Obviously, most notably, what most people are probably talking about is Calvin Johnson, Wednesday and Thursday, did not practice. Anybody that is following them closely has probably read articles, especially if you play fantasy or anything like that. Calvin Johnson is projected to play, of course.
Right. Well, they're expecting him back tomorrow in limited capacity. Today, if you're listening on Friday, they're expecting him back to practice today in limited capacity. This really looks like it's just rest for a veteran.
It's more of a knee maintenance thing.
Right. The only thing that is pause for concern is that this is kind of the same track he was on in the Green Bay week and then was a late scratch. So, I mean, pay attention to it, but I would assume that in this position that Calvin's going to play.
You really hope that he does because this is still an important matchup. I mean, obviously on paper, we're clearly better than the Pittsburgh Steelers, but you never want to see Calvin not be on the field.
It scares me to death what that offense looks like without Calvin Johnson. We saw it in Green Bay. It was a shell of itself.
Absolutely. I mean, the guy's a dynamic playmaker. He opens up the offense in the run game, in the pass game. Absolutely. It's like you said, it's a shell without Calvin Johnson on the field. Let's cover some of these others. Defensive end, Ezekiel Ansah, did not practice again this week. I don't think that, you know, we don't really have, I mean, he's dealing with the ankle injury.
Right.
Bill Bentley, again, he did not practice as well.
Well, Ziggy, they're gonna take the wait and see approach. I mean, they got a lot vested in this kid. I don't see as they're gonna push him back. Especially this is the reason they built this big defensive line, that they can rotate a lot of players in, 8-9 players that can rotate in on the defensive line. I don't think they're gonna push Ziggy.
We've seen a lot more depth, offensive and defensive line this year. Let's actually talk about that offensive line real quick with the injuries. Corey Hilliard, limited practice Wednesday and Thursday. Again, not sure what he's going to do Friday as we're recording Thursday night. But a guy to keep your eye on. Obviously, we've seen Waddle step in. We've seen Jason Fox step in. So, you know, I mean, not too concerned. He was limited Wednesday and Thursday. But, you know, depending on what he's doing Friday, we could see him working in the mix. I think we have enough depth that they'll probably hold him out this week as well.
Well, there was a ton of questions coming into the season with the right side of that offensive line. As obviously, with guys are chairless moving on and Steven Peterman being cut by the Lions. But Schwartz, it was deep into the preseason. He didn't have starters named on the right side of that offensive line. So they've really been kind of rotating him in. And it's been next man up philosophy on the right side of the line. But the Lions' offensive line, they're the MVPs of the team this year, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I agree with that, because that's one thing that in past years, the Lions' offensive line has almost been – that and the secondary are the two things that Lions fans almost continuously talk about year after year after year as being fails for this team. That, you know, usually Matthew Stafford – takes a lot of sacks. Usually the secondary is getting burned deep. But, I mean, this offensive line, right, like you said, has stepped up. It has been amazing to watch, and we actually haven't covered it in previous weeks, and I feel like we have almost done it as a disservice, because as huge Lions fans, I guess we've just kind of taken it for granted, because once we saw them really step up and continue to play well, it's almost like we kind of pushed that to the back burner and just were like, well, they're good now. Let's just take
that
for granted.
Right, like it's an expected thing.
Exactly.
But this is truly a commodity in every sense of the word. Everybody knows, you know, that watches football at all, that everything is done up front, you know, on the offensive line and the defensive line. It's all one in the trenches. And that is the linchpin to everything else that happens on the football field, is what happens with the big hog mollies up front. And the offensive line has played outstanding football. You know, maybe our rushing numbers don't back that up entirely, but there's been effective lanes open for the runners. But, we're passing offense. We're just a high-volume passing offense, so right. The run numbers are not really going to be indicative of how well that offensive line is playing. The one stat that you can hang your head on is there's only 10 sacks against Matt Stafford this entire season. That is best in the NFL.
Absolutely. That's better than Peyton Manning.
Correct.
Second in the NFL. And that's outstanding. Like you said, you know, and although we're only 21st in rushing yards, bottom line is we're averaging over 103 yards a game.
Right.
And that's a huge improvement. Maybe not across the NFL, but for the Detroit Lions, that is a huge improvement.
And at 4 yards a carry, which is everything you want out of a starting running back. And what have we always said for years is that with how good the passing attack is, with Calvin Johnson and Matthew Stafford and whoever the secondary receivers are, is that if you even put a modest running game with that,
then you're going to have an explosive offense.
They're unstoppable.
And we have seen that. I mean, our offense ranking across the NFL in points per game, yards per game, passing yards per game, outstanding.
It is a flat-out fact, it is indisputable, that adding Reggie Bush and Joy Bell emerging has made this a better football team.
Without a doubt.
That it's as easy as that.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons, and it's all coming together. That offensive line, secondary stepping up better than what we expected. Guys like DeAndre Levy and a linebacking corps stepping up, being better against the run. You know, and then obviously, like you said, Joy Bell emerging and Reggie Bush getting signed, emerging, you know, along with that passing game. And all of these things have to come together, but absolutely, I mean, you can really pinpoint certain things like that and say, this team, not only on paper, but on the field, is way better.
All things have to converge, you know, from coaching philosophy and scheme to the roster people, to the equipment people, to the training staff. Just everything has to come together, because the talent in the NFL from team to team is so close that it's the little things that actually separate you. And the Lions have won 6 games for a reason.
Consistency.
It's not blind luck.
Consistency.
They're playing good football, and like you said, they're being consistent.
We haven't had that.
Yeah.
We haven't had that.
This is completely different than what the 2011 Lions did to go to the playoffs. This is a better football team.
Yeah, well, the 2011 Lions had to win a majority of those games in the fourth quarter.
Coming from behind.
Now, this team definitely has that ability, and we have done that this year. We have second half, you know, comeback ability, and I love to see that out of the team, that they don't get discouraged and don't just throw away games when they get down. But what you're also seeing is the fact that we can, like we did with the Bears, taking that victory formation because you closed out.
Yeah, now the comeback is just a quiver in you know, an arrow in the quiver, rather. You know, it's just one piece of the arsenal. It's not everything. They're not living and dying on, well, we're going to get down, we're going to make stupid penalties, but we still got Matt Stafford and Calvin, so we're just going to throw the heck out of the ball and hope that we come out with a victory.
You don't need an 80-yard Hail Mary at the end of every game to get to 6-3.
Now, they have that ability still, inherently. Nothing has changed from that. They can still do that if they need it, but they don't require that to win football games, and that's the fundamental difference between now and 2011.
Well, and that's a better recipe for winning overall. The last guy that I really want to touch on, obviously, is Nate Burleson.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to get to him last. I'm sorry. Let's talk about Luis Delmas real quick.
Okay.
Wednesday did not practice. Thursday limited practice. I think he is going to go this week.
I think with Luis Delmas, it's the same kind of thing. It's really preventative stuff. He's a game changer out there. He's a ball hawker. He's a big hitter. He's a guy that is all over the field. He really sacrifices his body week in and week out. And he was a guy that we desperately missed last year. So they're doing everything they can to try to keep him healthy and keep him on the field because he is a spark plug on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, similar to Nate Burleson on the offensive side of the ball.
Right.
So let's talk about Nate Burleson a little bit. Obviously, limited practice Wednesday and Thursday. Likely he'll be limited practice, not full participation on Friday. We don't think that he's going to go this week. But again, a big impact guy on the sidelines. He's still been there every single week coaching up these guys. And, you know, I realize that a lot of people out there don't think that Nate Burleson is a huge impact player. And he's not. He really is past his prime. And we're not huge on him from, you know, an on-the-field perspective. But I will say this, though, is he's still the clear-cut number two receiver when he is on the field.
Yeah, I think without a doubt. Even with Chris Durham playing a little bit better football, but they're beyond Chris Durham. There really is nothing else that you could even make a comparison to as far as a number two wide receiver. I know Brandon Pettigrew is playing better, but he's at the tight end position. Burleson is a guy that he drives a lot in the player meetings, in practice. He's a leader on the team, no question about it. He's a guy that younger players look to. He's a very good mentor on the team. Given he's lost some of his physical ability, he doesn't have the speed that he has anymore, but he's a savvy guy.
Absolutely.
So he's an important guy to have back on the team. I think it's going to be an emotional lift when Nate Burleson does come back. And anything that we can get positively going for the Lions going forward is going to be great. Burleson coming back will be a nice thing to have.
Absolutely. I mean, and we got to remember, I mean, he had like six catches for over 100 yards the week that he ended up going out. And, I mean, really, if you look at it, now, obviously, he's pretty low on the stats because he's been out a significant amount of time.
Yeah.
But 19 catches for 239 yards. That's a 12.6 yard per catch average. I mean, if you look at the second receiver behind Calvin Johnson, it's Reggie Bush. 34 catches, 343 yards. We don't have that second receiver right now.
Yeah, before the injury, Nate Burleson really was on his way to his best years of life.
Close to it, at least. You know, if not right on pace for beating it. So that kind of wraps it up for the injuries. So from there, let's touch a little bit on the NFC North standings. I know we touched on that last week. We did talk about the playoff picture a little bit, but I feel like, it's a nice thing to touch on because mostly as a Lions fan, who doesn't love to hear about the Detroit Lions being number one in the NFC North?
No doubt about it.
And just a quick stat on that too. I mean, last week we said that the Detroit Lions have actually never won, the NFC North, which is true. They won the NFC Central.
In 1993, correct.
Exactly. But one more interesting thing that I learned is we've actually never finished above third place in the NFC North, ever.
That's so depressing.
It really is.
But that just makes this all the sweeter, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Man, I'm pulling for them so hard. You know, but obviously the big win over the Bears, puts us in front definitively. Packers lose as well last week.
To the Eagles, yeah.
And they lose Seneca Wallace.
Yeah.
But they're down to Scott Tolzien. They did sign Matt Flynn, as we speculated. Who knows, we're going to see him. I mean, that's the last guy Lions fans want to see, but I just think he
did have the huge game. It is surprising to me that they waited that long.
I agree.
I thought they were going to get him because we knew that they had to come out and say, oh, we have all the confidence in the world.
Of course.
Because you got to say what you got to say.
Right.
I mean, but I expected them to sign them a week earlier than they did.
Yeah, I didn't expect to see them rolling the dice literally on Seneca Wallace and having Scott Tolzien back him up. Are you kidding me?
Hey, all the better for the Lions.
Yeah, that's fine. Now, I keep hearing murmurs that Rodgers is speedy in his recovery, that he's never had a whole lot of injuries, so his body heals quickly. He's in very good shape. You know, call me a Lions homer, but I'd rather not see Rodgers for Thanksgiving.
I absolutely don't want to see him either. I really don't.
And I don't really care about the argument, well, you want to beat the best. I don't care. I want to win.
I want to win, too.
That's all I care about.
Because it only matters about getting hot at the right time, and the right time is after Week 17. All right, with that, let's touch on the playoff picture a little bit now that we have caught up on the NFC North.
Okay.
So let's kind of project. I know, you know, it's pure projection. We're really only halfway. We're a little bit over halfway.
Barely past, yep.
But we're halfway through the season. But it's nice just to kind of talk a little bit about what you think is going to happen with the playoffs, who's there. Now, the NFC East, as terrible as they all are, that Eagles team is emerging. And a lot of people thought, okay, the Cowboys have sealed it up. It's really going to be the first team to make it to 8 or 9 wins. It's going to take that. Eagles are making a big push. Nick Foles has come on real strong, and they're looking better.
Also, you have one of the most dangerous running backs of the game in LeSean McCoy.
Shady.
DeSean Jackson is playing very well. Riley Cooper has emerged.
No kidding.
Out of nowhere. But the Eagles playing pretty good under football right now. Now, who knows? I mean, everybody was down on Chip Kelly after just a couple of weeks after his NFL debut. But, you know, the Eagles look like the team to beat, at least in the East right now. Now, I still don't think they're going to have a wild card out of the East.
I don't think so either. I think either the Cowboys or the Eagles are going to emerge as the weeks come on, and you're going to see that team clinch, and then that's just it out of the East. Right. I agree. Let's move on to the South. New Orleans Saints and the Carolina Panthers really battling back and forth. Saints had a huge win. They crushed the Cowboys.
Just demolished.
So that put them up to 7-2. They're still a full game ahead of the Carolina Panthers, who are 6-3. That Panthers team looks good.
They struggled mightily against the San Francisco 49ers, though. It was only 10-9 win. It was an ugly, ugly win. And the Saints just rolled over Dallas.
Well, like I said last week, too, I think that Sean Payton was pretty embarrassed about the previous week.
Yeah.
They wanted to come out strong. Pierre Thomas, Darren Sproles, all those guys had good games. Drew Brees looked really solid. You know, you saw the passing game open up, and they scored a lot of points.
They sure did. That is a dangerous offense. I mean, all three running backs there were highly productive, and Darren Sproles, Pierre Thomas, Mark Ingram, who had done nothing. It basically, his entire NFL career busts out with a 155-yard, one-touchdown performance. I was blown away. But the Saints are dangerous. I think the Saints run away with that, and Carolina is going to have a few bumps along the way. They still are definitely in wild-card contention, but I don't think they overtake the Saints in the South.
I don't think they do either, but they really only need to be better than the San Francisco 49ers, which they were. Who are also 6-3, because Seattle in the West has run away with it. They're 9-1. I mean, they're second in the NFL behind the Chiefs, only because they have a loss, and the Chiefs haven't had their bye week, so they're 9-0.
Right. Although Seattle has looked a little shaky, especially defensively in recent weeks, I don't think that Seattle's invincible.
I don't either, but it's hard to call anyone who's got a 900 average shaky.
Fair enough. I guess I don't like the Seattle Seahawks as much as everybody else does. I just see real vulnerability there, especially defensively. Now, they're a good team. There's no doubt about it. They're a very good football team. But I think they're beatable by any of the teams that are in playoff contention. They don't scare me to death. I would much rather play Seattle, but albeit not at home.
Nobody wants to play the 12th right. man.
I don't want to play him in Seattle, but I'd much rather have a matchup with Seattle than I would with the Saints.
Well, the Saints might be the ones to say that you don't necessarily want to play Seattle. You know, the bottom line is, you know, I mean, we're hoping, and you know, we're really thinking that the Detroit Lions have a great shot at winning the North because you really want to secure that home playoff game. But if you're fighting for a wild card, it's going to be a real scrap.
The thing to note, though, is that we're only a game back of the Saints for the first round bye, the second first round bye. So if the Saints hit a bump along the road and the Lions continue to pile up the wins, we could be looking at that number two seed in the NFC.
And that's
how huge would that be?
That's huge.
You get a divisional round playoff game at Ford Field, guaranteed. I might go to that one.
I'd want to be there.
I will be feeling that.
I'd want to be there. Well, that's basically your playoff picture. So with that, I really want to dig into the Steelers matchup. Now, before we really dig into the stats, as a Lions fan, I mean, what's your gut tell you? Because mine's saying, I'm still scared of the Steelers team. I know they're 3-6, but we're going to Heinz Field, and Roethlisberger is a gunslinger.
It's perception. I know the Steelers stink, and I know the Lions are hot right now. But just like the Chicago game, I guess as a Lions fan, I'm just terrified of the letdown.
Absolutely. Now, I'm not saying that Ben Roethlisberger is Brett Favre, but he's a gunslinger. He's notorious for keeping the play alive, and he's huge. He's 6'5", he's same height as Calvin Johnson, and he's like 255. He's got like 20 pounds on the guy. So he's a big dude. Now, given he's notorious for ankle injuries and all that kind of good stuff, but he does not throw the ball away unless he absolutely has to. And he's another guy too. He takes sacks to let receivers get open because he's got the body to do it.
He's been crushed this year though. Just obliterated. I mean, their offensive line is decimated with injury and has been most of the year. I think the Steelers are going to be on their fifth different offensive line combination in the last 10 games.
Well, I understand. I mean, Roethlisberger's been sacked 35 times. That's second most in the NFL.
Yeah, see?
Behind only Ryan Tannehill is the only quarterback that's been sacked more.
And look, and they just lost two starters at this whole Richie Incognito debacle.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's saying something. That offensive line in Pittsburgh stinks.
They are bad, but if any quarterback can stand up to that kind of brutality, it's Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
Considering the fact, I mean, you got to think, Antonio Brown, he leads the NFL with 67 receptions.
But it's similar to the Detroit Lions. I mean, Antonio Brown's about what they've got as far as a dependable receiver.
Well, I would argue that the Steelers' wide receiver core is definitively better than the Lions.
Because, I think talent-wise, no doubt about it.
Well, numbers-wise, too, because, like I said, you know, this was kind of the gut check thing before we get into the numbers, but I guess I'll just kind of break it down real quick. Antonio Brown, 67 for 805,
okay,
averaging 12 with three touchdowns. Now, he was their lead receiver. Clearly, Calvin's numbers are much better, especially, you know, with yards and touchdowns, but, you know, you expect that. But Emmanuel Sanders, 41 receptions, 507. Jericho Cotchery, 31 catches, 455. Heath Miller, 25 catches, 274. So their top three guys, all better than our number two.
Now, bear in mind, though, they haven't been able to run the ball for crap all year long.
Le'Veon Bell, I mean, he's been a touchdown guy, not terrible, but yeah, I mean, only averaging 3.3 yards carry.
They just struggled running the football, and part of this comes back to that offensive line, but there's a high volume of catches because Pittsburgh's just been forced to throw. They've been playing from behind a ton.
Well, I mean, it's funny that you say that, though. I mean, because the power really has gone out of the running game on both sides of the ball. They're 27th in the NFL on offense and 29th on defense when it comes to the run. And they haven't beaten a team with a winning record yet.
That speaks volumes right there.
Absolutely.
And I mean, Emmanuel Sanders is a guy I've watched for a couple of years now because I like the talent. I think he's got all the tools, but he is just so up and down. I mean, he's right. He has key drops, you know, just really inopportune times. He can kill you with the big play. He's got all the big play ability you'd want in wide receiver, but he's just up and down on the consistency. And Antonio Brown is the only guy that they can really count on the outside. Now, Cotchery seems like he's been a decent addition there. I mean, he's a father time, you know, reemerging as a talent in Pittsburgh, and he's been a touchdown guy as of late. But, you know, Heath Miller, he responded well after his offseason surgery, and he looks like the knees aren't bothering him anymore. And Heath Miller has been a very dependable guy as well. But they've just been passing in volume because they've had to.
Right. I mean, Heath Miller is listed on the injury report, but as of Thursday, he was already a full participation in practice, so we don't think that he's really going to be bothered or anything like that. Yeah, I mean, he's been a solid. I mean, 25 for 274, averaging 11. Only one touchdown, though, so it hasn't been a huge red zone threat, but still a guy you got to look out for.
No doubt. No doubt. And the Lions have proven that they can be a little bit soft in the middle.
Absolutely.
So that's something to look out for. But, you know, Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders are both speedy guys. They're both guys that can get open. They're both, and Big Ben's got a huge arm. I mean, it scares me a little bit that a vulnerable Lions secondary gives up a biggie here.
Are we more scared because of name recognition? Because it's the Pittsburgh Steelers, because that team has won 6 Super Bowls, because they've been to 3 in the last 10 years.
That's a good point. I think just like the Lions, you hope that they're not intimidated, or that, you know, the Lions try to become that team that commands respect. The Pittsburgh Steelers are definitely one of those teams that commands respect. And it trickles down all the way to the fans, because we have a perception, too, like, here we go with the Lions against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right.
So, yeah, it's definitely a perception issue. The Lions are a better football team.
Absolutely. On paper and on the field, like you said, I mean, they're 3-6.
Right.
We're 6-3.
Yes.
They're last in the AFC North.
But what's important is that Detroit has to go out and act like they're a 6-3 team. They need to execute like they're a 6-3 team. They don't need to play to the level of their opponent and act like they're 3-6.
Absolutely. And like we talked about, that sustainment of the winning culture.
Yes.
Well, that's kind of the gut check reaction. I think a lot of you guys would agree that, you know, you go into those games hesitant. I think Tampa Bay is probably the only one that no one is really worried about. Everyone else, at least there's some concern.
Sure. It's the NFL. Look what's happened to the Colts as of late. I mean, they were in their driver's seat, too. They got embarrassed by, St. Louis?
Yeah.
Yeah, just absolutely rolled by St. Louis, and it's not looking good against Tennessee tonight. It can happen to anybody, any given Sunday.
Well, like I said that, and Tampa Bay did get their first win.
True.
So, even an 0-8 team can win.
Anybody can beat anybody, and it's whether or not you let that happen when you're a better football team. And that's what the Lions have done in years past. That's what they cannot do this season.
You can't play to your opponent's level. You got to play your game. You got to do what you got to do to shut them down.
Go out and make the Lions mean something.
Well, let's take a look at the offensive and defensive outlook. Let's really dig into this matchup. Let's take a look at the numbers and see what that has to say. We covered some stats already. But, I mean, on paper, this Lions team not only should win, but should win definitively. We are better.
I think it's got some shootout potential just because...
Well, Big Ben.
Yeah. And you know, obviously, one of the weaknesses on the Lions team would be that secondary and the likelihood that we give up the big play. So I think it's very possible that this could turn out into a bit of a shootout game. But I think one of the things that would be really nice to see is some ball control. You know, keep Big Ben off the field. Just be efficient on offense. You get the ball, score with the ball. It's not rocket science.
Absolutely. And, you know, we did touch on that stat. I don't know if you have a current one in front of you, but we have been pretty effective in getting those teams off the field. So, and as far as big plays are concerned, the Lions have given up a total of 11 plays of 40-plus yards this season, and that's taking an average of just 6.5 plays during opponent scoring drives, which is the lowest in the NFL. So it's not great when it comes to giving up big plays and allowing those drives. I mean, the Lions' secondary needs to step up, and you need to get that pressure on them. Now, we've seen that defensive line really step up. Sue and Fairley both had a sack and 4 quarterback hits against Jay Cutler. So, like we talked about, he really got a lot of pressure and all that stuff. And, you know, they both had a sack. So they need to continue that against Big Ben. But Big Ben is the most... you know, as Rasheed Mathis put it, the most mobile, immobile quarterback in the NFL.
That's a good way to put it, actually. But this is going to be a huge matchup as the Lions defensive front against that battered Pittsburgh offensive line. I mean, you got injuries to Raymond Foster, David DeCastro, Guy Wimper, Mike Adams, Kelvin Beachum, and Fernando Velasco, just to name a few. That's not even all of them. I mean, Pittsburgh has been pillaged on the offensive line, and this is the time for that vaunted front line. For the defense for the Lions needs to step up and take control of the game. This is a spot where we can win the matchup. We can win the battle in the trenches. And if we can do that, it's going to be a long day for Big Ben and the Pittsburgh offense.
Well, hopefully they're going to have to come from behind because, I mean, like you said, if that offense steps up and Lamar Woodley, their top linebacker, the guy that everybody knows, he's the team leader in sacks with 5. They only have 16 on the year.
Mm-hmm.
He did not practice Thursday or Wednesday. We don't know what his status is on Friday, but it doesn't look like he's going to go. So really, I mean, if your sack leader's out, now given they're still getting good pressure, the defense isn't awful. You can't completely underestimate them, but really we should be able to step up and you know, and take advantage of all these injuries that Pittsburgh has sustained.
Well, it's going to come down to offensive efficiency again, and we got to put this one squarely on the shoulder of number 9. You know, and him putting the ball in the air, this team can be thrown on. They're certainly they're not terrible against the pass, but the Lions are exceptionally good in the pass, and they've been exceptionally good at not turning the ball over in the passing game. I mean, Stafford is essentially throwing less than 2 interceptions per 100 attempts. So he has a 1.9% interception rate, which is top 10 in the league and tied with Drew Brees. So if Detroit can be efficient with the football, hold on to it, and keep moving the ball in the passing game, they are going to put up some points pretty quick on Pittsburgh.
Well, that brings up 2 interesting stats here. Like you said, we're talking about passing game. The Lions are actually 3rd in the league, averaging 306.9 passing yards per game. But the Steelers' defense is actually 4th in the league, only allowing 201.3 passing yards per game.
But like you said, they haven't beaten anybody with a winning record, and they haven't played Megatron.
That's true. And they have played, here's that New England Patriots talk again. 2 weeks ago, they gave up 4 fourth-quarter touchdowns and 610 total yards in a loss to the Patriots.
They got embarrassed by Aaron Dobson, Gronkowski. I mean, they got embarrassed. And they haven't faced anything like Calvin. You know, nobody faces anything like Calvin until they actually play Calvin.
Absolutely. And the other thing that you alluded to was turnovers and possession and making sure, you know, the Lions have not lost this season. They are 4-0 when they forced at least 2 turnovers. And that's huge. When you've got, you know, that positive turnover ratio, again, we're still +1, which isn't, you know, that's nothing.
Sure.
But bottom line is, if you've forced at least 2, we're 4-0. So let's keep that up. If Levy continues to do what he does, if that line continues to get pressure, hopefully you get another tip ball. Maybe you see Glover Quinn, DeAndre Levy. If Delmas is out there and he's healthy and he's able to move freely, you know, hopefully you can see Don Carey step up and make some more big plays like we saw out of him last week. This secondary is capable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rashid Mathis, again, he led the team in tackles last week. You want to see these guys continue to step up, take a look at it, pretend it's just that one game season, and go out and be 1-0.
And let's not forget that you talk about Ben Roethlisberger being a gunslinger. That also means he's prone to mistakes.
Absolutely.
You know, and we've had a fair amount of interceptions in the secondary this season. So turnovers going to be huge in this one, as it always is. Turnovers, penalties, and special teams. You know, you got to win all those facets as well. Those are huge contributors to a win. If you get a couple of turnovers on Pittsburgh, it's just that much more pressure for them to stop our offense.
Right. Well, let's talk about some of the keys to victory. Like, what's really going to set this Lions team apart? How are they going to be able to step up, attack this defense, and really shut down this offense? We talked a little bit about Le'Veon Bell, only averaging 3.3, and the Detroit Lions on defense against the rush are 8th in the league. That's really their best defensive stat in the NFL, only allowing 100.7 rushing yards per game.
Well, I think that comes down definitively to you got to stop Le'Veon Bell. You got to limit the rushing attack. In fact, the Steelers have run the ball just over 51% of the time in their 3 wins and around 30% of the time in their 6 losses. When they have a balanced rushing attack versus the pass and they've got everything clicking on offense, Pittsburgh wins football games. They're a good enough defense to keep them in games, and if they're balanced and efficient on offense, they're right in it. And they're a team that knows how to win. There's a lot of veteran presence. They got a great head coach. It's just a good organization. You got to get them off balance. You got to stop the run. It's that simple. And the Lions have done fantastic at that this year. We just saw them shut down Matt Forte for next to nothing. Le'Veon Bell is certainly no Matt Forte.
I want to talk a little bit about we alluded to it earlier. We touched on it briefly. Let's talk about the 2 receiving cores between these 2 teams. Now, Big Ben, again, kind of talk about the same thing here again, but really getting into the receiving core, Antonio Brown, Emmanuel Sanders, Jericho Cotchery, you got Heath Miller, who they can move into the slot. They can run him out of a tight end position. You know, they can use a jumbo package and put him down on the line, make him an eligible receiver. There's a lot of different looks that they can see. How does this Lions defense adapt?
Well, you got to start with pressure, obviously. We're talking about this decimated offensive line. You got to be able to get in Big Ben's face. You got to contain him on the edges. You can't let him escape and extend plays. You have to force him to make a decision relatively quickly or face going down to the turf. And if you do that, then it takes so much pressure off your secondary. If you're forcing quick throws, inaccurate throws, throws that are long, throws that sail, anything like that. And Big Ben, like you say, I mean, he's a guy that throws off balance all the time anyway. You just get in his face, disrupt him, disrupt the timing of the offense, stop the run, you make them one-dimensional. That just bodes well in all facets for the Detroit Lions. You're going to force mistakes. You're going to force turnovers. You're going to force pressure back on Pittsburgh to stop our offense.
Well, we also really need to see Rasheen Mathis and Chris Houston step up, continue to play well, hopefully, you know, disrupt those routes, play that tight coverage. And then you can see guys like Glover Quinn and Lewis Delmas kind of float around and do their thing, be more pass disruptors. And then obviously those linebackers, depending on the scheme of what they're seeing, you know, whether they're stacking the box, deciding to rush, or they want to play back, hopefully Levy can get another pick. You really need to see this Lions defense be adaptable and make those adjustments, is really depending on what you see in the first half, but hopefully on the fly. I mean, that's what we've seen other successful teams do year after year. They make those sideline adjustments, come back in on the next series, and they don't get fooled by the same things over and over again.
Well, you know you're going to get the double on Ndamukong Suh in the A-gap.
Of course.
In between center and tackle. It's just, or center and guard, rather. It's just going to happen. Suh draws the double on every single play. It's really been a testament to how consistent Suh has played all season long, that he's been able to consistently beat a double team. He's made a bunch of tackles. He hasn't gotten the quarterback a whole lot, but who's going to against two guys, two NFL-grown men trying to stop you every play? The people that need to step up because of that, guys like Willie Young, guys like C.J. Mosley, guys like Nick Fairley. And Fairley has been a guy that when he showed up, he's been a monster. He's absolutely dominated. But he does have weeks where he seems to take games off and he disappears. You got to have Fairley and a presence in the middle. Anybody that's in on that defensive line rotation has got to be disruptive because Suh is doing all the work.
Absolutely. And like you said, we really do need to contain him on the outside. Hopefully Willie Young, like you said, or Israel Adonijé can really step up and kind of contain on the outside, because we see Roethlisberger flush from the middle of the pocket week after week after week.
This is part of Jim Washburn's Y-9 technique, is that you're trying to seal the edge, and you're not letting them get outside. You're widening the pocket, but you're also not letting anybody extend toward a sideline and buy time for receivers to get open downfield or check back routes across the middle. And the Lions are vulnerable to that kind of thing. So you got to seal the edge. You got to keep Big Ben Roethlisberger right in front of you.
Let's talk a little bit about the receiving core on the Lions side of the ball. Calvin Johnson, obviously far and away our number one most talented top receiver, best receiver in the NFL. 53 catches, over 900 yards, averaging over 17, 9 touchdowns, crushing it. Loving to see what Calvin's doing. But you worry, is there any passing game outside of him? Like we said, Reggie Bush, I mean, he's our number one rusher, our number two receiver.
This is going to be a day where you're going to see Ike Taylor one-on-one with Calvin Johnson, or I take that back, not one-on-one, but Ike Taylor definitively on Calvin Johnson. He's going to follow him around the field, and then they're going to shade Troy Polamalu above Ike Taylor. You're going to see it all day long. Now, Calvin is good enough that he can beat that, but it also means that you got to have people step up on the other side of the field, because Pittsburgh has got some vulnerability in their secondary as well. And obviously the Detroit offensive line is providing enough time for Matt Stafford to throw. He's the least sacked quarterback in the NFL. So that means that it's on the other receivers besides Calvin Johnson to do their job as well, get open and give an open target for Matthew Stafford to deliver the football.
Well, you really hope that we can see Chris Durham step up, Ogletree, Ross. They've been super creative in the slot because we just haven't had any consistency in those positions, the number two in the slot receiver. Pettigrew, again, I mean, he was interviewed this week and was talking about how he's been definitively learning as a route runner just by watching Calvin Johnson, and we really saw him step up last week. Hopefully he can do that again, because this defense will really be, especially with the absence of Woodley, be vulnerable over the middle, especially if you have those safeties playing deep, covering back on Calvin Johnson.
Depending on how this game plan goes in practice, especially with Calvin having been sit out, who's that number one guy in practice this week? My bet is Brandon Pettigrew. And if that's how they install this game plan coming in this week, they know what Calvin's going to do. They call a route, he's going to be there. If Brandon Pettigrew has gotten all of this work this week and he has talked the talk and he's coming off a good performance, he's building some confidence. Obviously, the Lions staff is they love Brandon Pettigrew.
They believe in him.
And if they feel like they're moving him toward the tight end that they want him to be, this could be a game where he gets featured.
Well, we certainly hope that someone outside of Calvin gets featured, because you really do want to take the pressure off him. You want to be able to spread the ball around effectively, because you can't be a singular track game. You can't just focus in on him, because at some point, I mean, we always talk about nobody can shut down Calvin Johnson, but it's been shown that if he's the only guy to go to, you can slow him down. You can slow down the production.
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, he's not going to kill you for, 14 catches for 250 yards and, whatever.
Not under bracket coverage and a safety over top.
No, but Calvin's going to get his 80 to 100, and he's going to get looks in the red zone. I mean, that's just going to happen. I don't care who's on him. I don't care if it's Revis and Sherman on him at the same time. Calvin's going to get those looks. He's going to get those numbers.
My big concern being, though, is moving forward, okay, this is the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've got injuries. We know we can handle them as long as you have Calvin Johnson doing his thing. Brandon Pettigrew gets installed, maybe gets featured as a guy in the slot. They move him around. They do whatever. And then, of course, you're going to still have your tandem of Bell and Bush, who can also receive out of the backfield. That can easily win you this game. Moving forward, though, is that still a recipe for winning? What happens when we face better teams in the playoffs?
You got to remember, we're going to have Bertelsen coming back. That's at least somebody that dictates some coverage. You can't ignore the guy. And if Pettigrew has all of a sudden emerged as a reliable over-the-middle tight end, and Bush and Bell are still consistent, now you're talking about a team that's got 4-5 options in the passing game and an effective offensive line to go with it, and a quarterback with time who's not getting sacked. I don't want no part of that if I'm an NFL defense.
And with time, too, we could see Broyles come back and step up. He has been in limited snap counts, but he's off the injury report. So hopefully we can see him step up. I know that they've been fairly pleased, at least with practice, of what we've seen out of Ross and Ogletree. Not hugely effective on the field, but they are guys that, I mean, you can't let any receiver run free.
Sure, of course.
So, at least you're drawing some coverage. We have seen a couple of bad drops out of those guys, but I'd like to see Durham step up too, because he could be. Now, they're not going to put him in the slot simply out of size. He's not a guy that just runs those kind of routes. But at least until
tallest receiver in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, at least until Burleson comes back and is fully effective, because we could see him on limited snap count initially as well.
Right.
I'd like to see Durham step up. Like we talked about before, had that huge catch against Dallas. Really, I mean, when he reels it in, he's a solid guy. Just lacks the consistency that you'd really like to see out of a definitive number two.
I hope that it's a confidence thing, that it's a rhythm thing, that it's something that they will continue to grow into, and it's not just something where they're crippled by their lack of talent.
Right.
That's what I'm hoping, as a Lions fan, that they just continue to get better, and by the time that we get deeper in the season, we're making the playoff push, we've got a lot of weapons all of a sudden.
Absolutely, because like you said, we've got the schedule that can dictate moving forward, winning some games, and then you'll have Broyles healthy, you'll have Burleson healthy. Hopefully Durham's got a little more time, played a few more snaps, has better chemistry with Stafford. Pettigrew hopefully can establish himself, continue to play well. And so, yeah, that's really what you'd like to see. So hopefully it is a sustainability thing, that these guys can really put some more talent on the field, that we can recover from those injuries, because as far as the NFC North goes, we're one of the only teams that's not completely decimated by injuries.
We're surprisingly healthy, which is awesome. Oh, I mean, the Lions usually have a ton of injuries this time of year, and we've been really fortunate that we've stayed pretty healthy. And obviously that reflects in the record. You got to have your good players on the field in order to win football games. I mean, it's not hard.
Absolutely. Well, that pretty much tops off your keys to victory and the offensive and defensive outlook we have for the Steelers game. Let's get into the contender pick'em.
Okay, and at the time we recorded last week, that Dallas-New Orleans Saints game was going on. Obviously, that went how we all thought it was going to go when we were recording it. New Orleans just trounced Dallas, so I lost on that one. We're both 3-1 on the year, and let's get right into the games for this week. First one up, we've got San Francisco at New Orleans.
New Orleans. They're going to roll them.
I think so, too. I think it's the Saints. I mean, just looking at what they did to Dallas. And it's, it's back at the Superdome. They're at home. San Francisco struggled mightily against Carolina. San Francisco is not a team on the up. They're just kind of treading water, and New Orleans is full systems go.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Well, because New Orleans is absolutely going to be pushing to win out their division. San Francisco is really knowing that they're going to be looking to compete for a wild card, and like you said, treading water. Hopefully they can hang on, you know, so that's what they're – but, yeah, New Orleans all the way.
Next one up is Green Bay Packers at the New York Giants. I thought this was a really interesting game.
This is a tough one to call because the Giants have been awful. But Eli has stepped up. He's looked better in recent weeks. Green Bay still, you know, I mean, Matt Flynn, is he starting? Is he not starting against the Giants? You know, so, I mean, you have those questions. So, I mean, you have, what's his name? Scott Tolzien?
Correct.
Like I said, I never even heard of this dude. He's 3 years in the NFL. I never even heard of him until last week.
Practice squad guy. I mean, obviously you're not going to know a whole lot about him. Really, for the Giants, their little turnaround here the last couple of weeks has been Jason Pierre-Paul has come back to that defense. The defense is playing much better football. They also got Andre Brown back off the IR designated return list. And
they have a run game.
They have an effective run game. It's amazing how a run game helps the passing game. But the Giants are playing better football right now. They're at home. I take the G-men.
I got to go ahead and agree with that one because, like you said, the effective run game, Eli is coming back a little bit stronger. Green Bay is still struggling. They're going to be down James Jones. They're going to be out JaMychal Finley. You know, I mean, you still have Jordy Nelson, but you don't have an effective quarterback who's played basically very
any meaningful football.
Exactly. Ever. So, yeah, I mean, you got to take the Giants on this one. You got to think that with an effective run game and a better defense, they're going to be able to handle the Packers.
Next game would be Baltimore Ravens at the Chicago Bears.
I think Chicago's still pretty hurt. I know that Baltimore is still under 500. They're not a great football team, but Chicago's really kind of fallen off. This one's a little tougher to call for me because you can see Chicago is, obviously, with Brandon Marshall's comments, they still have the attitude like they really want to be able to come back and make a push for the North. I don't see that's going to happen. Now, given, I mean, they're only one game back, but I don't know. I'm leaving Ravens on this one. I think Chicago's going to drop one more, and I think it's going to be one of those big blows to the team that really hurts them and just kind of pushes them back that much further.
I desperately hope you're right. I, however, disagree. I think Josh McCown is going to get the start in this one. I just don't know that Jay Cutler's healthy enough to give it another go. They're obviously in a must-win situation. The Chicago media has been all over. Did they leave Jay Cutler in too long? Did they perhaps blow this division by letting a hurt Cutler try to play against the Lions and limp around? I think McCown plays, and I think he gives them a little bit of a spark. They are absolutely in must-win territory. They cannot lose any more ground to the Lions. Baltimore isn't a particularly scary opponent. It's at home. They don't want to get punched in the mouth again. I got to take the Bears.
I understand your take, but I'm hoping I'm right. And I know you're hoping I'm right, too. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see. Like I said, I really do hope that Baltimore team can come out and address those guys. I mean, because that offensive line is struggling. I mean, we saw all these things, all the holes that the Bears have against the Lions, you know. But, all right, let's move on.
Now, typically, we'd put the Lions game here, but we all know who we're going to take with this one, so I don't think that's particularly entertaining to the listeners. I just chose a game that's really kind of historic for a lot of reasons, and it just looks great, like a good football game to pick. I know I'm going to be watching it for sure, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs, the undefeated Chiefs.
9-0.
At the Denver Broncos this week.
That's going to be a great game.
I can't wait to watch it.
Well, Peyton Manning's a little banged up, and that's a concern. Now, obviously, he's going to go. He's been limited to practice,
right,
but he's going to play.
Right.
They're fighting for the division. I mean, 9-0, 8-1, AFC West. I mean, you look at the Broncos and you're like, how are they not going to win that division? But then you're like, holy cow, the Chiefs? Alex Smith? I mean, that's an attribute to Andy Reid and that coaching staff. That is a huge turnaround.
Essentially the same personnel from last year, and they have turned it around in force this year. Andy Reid has done an amazing job, and he's getting everything out of that defense. That's one of the best defenses in the NFL against one of the best offenses in the NFL in the Denver Broncos. It's going to be a heck of a matchup.
Here's what I will say about it, though. What we have seen traditionally out of Peyton Manning, and even a little bit this year, is when you've gotten consistent pressure on him, those throws get shorter and shorter and shorter, and that run game becomes a little bit more less effective. You have more check down passes, which you know, you can end up struggling. Because if you can't stretch the field at all, you could just end up stacking the box. And that works well effective even against screen passes after a while. I'm actually going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs on this one. I think that the Chiefs defense is going to... I think they're going to hurt Peyton Manning, honestly. I don't think that they're going to go out there. I don't think Andy Reid's putting out marching orders like break his legs, go for the knees, do anything like that. I don't think that he's that kind of coach. I don't think the Chiefs have that kind of players. But I think that Peyton Manning is going to get disrupted a lot, and I think that's really going to affect him in this game. And I don't think that you're going to see that same Denver Broncos offense that you've been seeing for most of the year.
I don't think you're going to see the same Denver Broncos offense. I don't think you're going to see the stuff over the top to Demaryius Thomas. I don't think you're going to see the long seam stuff to Julius Thomas. I think we have the X factor named Wes Welker, who is just going to eat the Kansas City Chiefs alive in this game. It would not surprise me to see a 15 to 18 catch performance against the Chiefs, because Peyton is, exactly like you said, going to have no time to do anything else. I think it's going to be slot stuff to Demaryius or Decker, but a ton of that check down stuff to both Knowshon Moreno and Wes Welker. And Peyton Manning knows this. I mean, he's the best film watcher of any quarterback in the NFL. He knows the Chiefs are going to be coming for him in force. He knows he's not going to have enough time, but they have a very capable offensive line. And remember that Knowshon Moreno is also a very good pass-blocking running back, very good at picking up the blitz.
Absolutely.
And Manning is a precision quarterback. He's a rhythm guy. He's a guy that has to deliver the ball precisely, on time, on the route. And there's no better guy in the NFL at catching that type of pass than Wes Welker.
Well, and there's no faster quarterback at getting the ball to him either. He gets it out faster than anybody out of the pocket because he makes so many check reads at the line. But like I said, I think Kansas City steps up this week. I just don't think, because we've seen Peyton Manning struggle against superior defenses this year. And as tough it is to say, because, I mean, who doesn't want Peyton Manning? I mean, he's like an NFL sweetheart. Everybody wants to see this guy succeed. I mean, he's a legend. So, bottom line is, I'm going to be tuned into this one. It's going to be an amazing game to watch regardless. But, I mean, who knows? You could be right. I don't know. I could be – who knows? It's going to be crazy to watch regardless. So that is our one AFC pick of the day, I guess. And obviously
– that was just fun to pick.
Obviously, we're taking the Lions.
Of course. That goes without saying.
All right, let's make it interesting. Let's pick scores.
You want to call the score? Want to go first or have me go?
You go first.
I'm going to go 31-20 Detroit.
Okay. I think it's going to be a little bit more of a shootout. I'm going to go 35-28 Detroit. Now, that's a really high-scoring game. I might already regret that, but we'll see. I made the pick. It's recorded. You can't change it now.
It's in stone.
35-28 Detroit Lions. All right. Well, that wraps it up for the Contender Pick'em. So thanks for joining us on the Lions Pride Show, a podcast by the fans for the fans. Again, email us at lionsprideshow@gmail.com. We appreciate your support. We want your thoughts. We want your comments. We want you to send us as much stuff. We'd love to include your content.
Also, remember to like us on Facebook and send your reviews about the podcast, whether you like it, don't like it, things you'd like to see, things you'd like to change. Or just general comments about it. Write a review on iTunes for us.
Yep, you can search us on iTunes. Just type in Lions Pride or Lions Pride Podcast. Or you can check us out. Our direct link is lionsprideshow.podomatic.com. So we'll be back with the Week 11 recap, telling you all about the Lions' victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers on Monday. Go Lions!